Right now, it is time for the Media Beat with David Terachuk. Of course, David joins us every Friday. You'll find David with his own website, themediabeat.us, also on the Huffington Post, and also David is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. Ladies and gentlemen, through the magic of old-fashioned telephone technology, here he is, David Terachuk. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Good to be with you through the old-fashioned technology of a simple telephone. How nice.
There's everything to be said for the technology. I'm getting to the point where, you know, they're going to drag me out of here at some point saying, she just never got with it. She just never got with it.
Well, remain just the way you are, Jill. Not with it.
And now, David, I want to ask you, Jill and I were just talking about it. Are you sick and tired of the memo already?
Well, oh God! Yes, of course. And I'm just in somewhat stunned looking at the sandstorm that's been swirled up around it and about it. How effective! How wonderfully effective it is to have this kind of swirling mist of confusion and contrary reporting and contrary political commenting, all around a piece of paper which I suspect, when we get it, I suspect very strongly, is not going to be as impactful, to use that awful new voguish adjective, as the people who are talking about it seems to think it will be.
And that's part of the intent. What amazes me is if people would just do their... if people were actually interested in intelligence, as in counter propaganda, disinformation, the birth of the OSS, this would be a lesson. But because there is zero context to that, I really fear at this juncture that a lot of people don't know they're being played.
Mercifully, there are sort of darts of daylight through all this sandstorm, and one of them that I saw today was a wonderful headline, cutting to the core of the matter, in my mind at least, and I think it would help us a lot if we just saw it in this way. Headlines, after all, are about boiling things down to their essential simplicity. And a headline on a column by Michelle Goldberg is goes like this, very simple, summing up what the message of the memo actually is, don't believe the liberal FBI. And of course, we all know how liberal the FBI is, don't we? And what a danger they are because of their liberality. Yes, that's the message, and that is, I think, we will discover to be the intent and purpose of this memo when it finally reaches the full daylight. But of course, then it'll be drowned out, covered over, whatever it is, by the inevitable spinning reactions we get to it.
And what I really wanted to talk to you about, because even though we agreed at the beginning of the year that we had just absolutely exhausted the media literacy concept, I'm starting to think, I mean, not exhausted, but just talked about it as much as one could talk about it. I'm sitting here looking at this pretty much, and this is my opinion, it's your show, but it's my opinion, cesspit of just contaminated information across the board. And I'm trying to figure out how, if it's not your thing, but you just need to function, how you get good information. I'm a little alarmed that Google is attempting to go into the local news business.
Yes.
And I don't know. What do you say, dear?
Whatever your metaphor for the whole thing is, sandstorm or cesspit, yes, there's certainly a need for clarity and, if you like, clean information. Where do we go to get it? We have to pick and choose through a very messy array of possibilities. And I do get to the point of repeating myself inevitably on this. We know, those of us who consume media, we know, and it's our job to remember what we know. We know who we trust. And that seems to me the best principle to apply. Go to the people that we know have earned our trust. And that will vary for each individual. In my own case, as I've said often, talking with you two, I would go to the Financial Times in Britain, the New York Times from the USA, and indeed these days it is really, really helpful having Trump in the White House. In one respect, it has done wonders for the competition, which goes back to those heady days of Watergate and the reporting that was done by the Washington Post. The healthy and getting healthier by the day rivalry between the Washington Post and the New York Times. So I would bracket those two together, not because they are identical, indeed very much not. They get different sidelights on the subject of the day and many other subjects too. The whole range of investigative journalism in the political realm has been upped. The whole game has been upped so much by having to report on the confusions and fecklessness as well, I would say, of the Trump White House. And I could go on to, the BBC I remain loyal to the BBC. I worked for the BBC for only 2 weeks of my entire life, but I admire it enormously. Its thoroughness and its independence is, on the whole, completely reliable. Deutsche Welle from Germany, its international service is a wonder to behold every day. Sometimes its English isn't as perfect as it should be, but heaven's sake, I mean, that's a tiny concern compared with the quality of their journalism. And that's a pretty good starting point for me. There are little darts of interesting novelty in this field too. It's still quite new. The people behind Politico and those other newer appearances by very dedicated journalists are there to go to as well. I favor Axios very much in that tradition, owned by the Boston Globe. I know it's a site that you turn to as well. There are an array of people, and of course this is made up of people, individual talents that are combined in team efforts. And if we know them because of what they've done in the past for us, and we've seen over time that we can trust them, I would just say go to the sources you know and the sources that you trust.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
This is all good. But the concern is that I'm not worried about you going to the sources that you know or trust. I'm not worried about Marshall. And worried is the wrong word. But I do know that, for example, there are other people who just basically take what they see. They're doing their lives, and they take what they see at the bottom of on the Chiron on the screen, or they take the headline, and it doesn't at this point give enough information. It's almost like as though it's a position that one is either supposed to agree or disagree with, rather than stimulating some thoughts.
Well, it's difficult to say. I think what you're asking is how do we get other people besides the very competent and sane and balanced people like ourselves to be able to make sensible and critical judgments of the media matters that they consume. It's about teaching. It's about and it's as difficult as teaching ever is. Essentially, I mean, to boil this creed de coeur down, it's an appeal to people to don't be lazy.
Yeah,
and that's a hard bit of teaching to do. I don't frankly know how you encourage people to to consume media better. And this in spite of the fact that I have taught media literacy, and I have taught journalism to aspiring journalists, too. And the two things are not so different. But essentially, it does boil down to don't be lazy. You cannot accept information coming your way purely passively. You have to be questioning about it. And that means putting in a bit of effort. And I've said this many times on this slot, too. It's a matter of saying, don't take what you're spoon-fed. Take it with a pinch of salt, of course, and then do your own other efforts to test the flavor. See if it's really comparing with another source which you also know, and as I say, preferably one that you've trusted over time.
And I'll give you what I think is a perfect example. I was just looking at Axios, and there are two little things, 31 minutes ago, and. If you listen to the radio, you know, obviously you hear all these ads for crypto, all right? So we're going to talk about cryptocurrencies for 1 second. There's one thing that says, gee, Bitcoin's now below 8,000, 31 minutes ago. And there's another piece on how cryptocurrencies are being used to evade sanctions. Now, if you have a mind that just adds two and two, you can start to see that if, God forbid, you have crypto holdings, you might want to abandon ship. But if you are not like that, then at least you can see two slightly, I won't say contradictory, but inconsistent. The two bits of information that you can, and I think people who are interested just generally in law or legal niceties, I think that would appeal to their sort of, let's just say, detective-type tendencies.
Well, anything that does appeal to those tendencies in us is probably a good idea. Stimulate the idea of critical thinking, and the doubting Thomas in everyone needs to be encouraged. Just don't take it. Don't take it.
But the Doubting Thomas element, and we would be remiss if we didn't say this, Doubting Thomas is not just, oh, you're a moron, I don't like you, you're wrong.
No, I go back to the wonderful Monty Python sketch. This is not an argument. an argument isn't just a simple naysaying of what the other side says. Although,
but that's our news.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. The stuff that masquerades as news, especially right. on cable news. 24-hour cable news has to fill its time, of course, and discussion and opinionation. In other words, just sort of the bald statement of a position in contradiction to somebody else, not reasoned argument. Where do we go for that these days?
And that's part of the problem, because the panel... You know, I still go back to...
The dominance of the panel. Sometimes eight people, perhaps, around a table, or strung out along a very long table to, you know, give you a most messy and unappealing shot on a television screen. Yeah.
Yeah, it being a visual medium, but it makes me think of... I'm sorry, please forgive me. It makes me think of death... The whole death panel thing. And that goes back some political time, but the point being that
at one point even Donald Trump was prepared to acknowledge that the making of health policy is difficult. And it's from those days that the whole idea of death panels came up, and sure, the quality of discussion about that issue, the very labeling of it, of course, as the death panels issue, it shows what kind of degeneration had come to our mental processes as we tried to pick our way through that really very complicated area of how America cares for the health of its nation. You'd think that could be boiled down to simple and clear ideas, but of course no. It got into its own daily sandstorms, though I don't think we've ever seen anything quite so confusing and obfuscating as what we've got now around the Mueller investigation into two things: with the Russia matter, the collusion of the Trump campaign, the alleged collusion of the Trump campaign with Russia, and the possibility of obstruction of justice, even by the pinnacle of our executive.
And no, exactly. It's just it's going to be day in, day out, and I'm not sure it's ever particularly ending. And I think it's pretty tedious for people whose interests don't lie there. And the other thing that we have to work out on a media literacy platform, if you will, is how do you get past the first six things that every single news source seems to be talking about, because there's more than that going on in the world.
Yeah, sure. And the need then is to, you know, have these these guideposts that you plant in your mind very clearly, and don't forget them. You know, we're all fallible. We're all human agencies, and those human agencies are peopled by individual humans. So you're not going to find perfection anywhere. But knowing that there are points in the landscape that you can turn to for purely, you know, proven and tested guides. That's when you know that you're going to be okay. I'm discovering a new one, which I want to sing the praises of just briefly. In amongst those institutional sources I was mentioning earlier on, I would single out the work of one particular man. He's at the Washington Post, a reporter called Devlin Barrett, who covers justice. And it's a good specialty to concentrate on at the moment with all the swirling stuff that can obscure our view coming up in our in the entire media landscape. He's essentially, I mean, to oversimplify, as journalists often do, as I say, boil it down, he's essentially a crime blotter man and you know, straightforward journalism. He began as a copy boy at the New York Times many years ago. Now he covers the Justice Department for the Washington Post, and that means that he's made a specialty, and he has wonderful, clearly has the most wonderful, to use an old-fashioned word, Rolodex of contacts within all the institutions that make up justice and its agencies, the FBI, the DEA, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Service, and the U.S. Marshals, indeed. and it is clear from his writing that people come to him with stories, actual facts, stuff that is not getting out through the official sources, but the people clearly know Mr. Barrett, and they clearly treat him with trust and respect. And so we can see through his reporting, straightforward, fact-based, specialty informed, specialization being a way to really understand how one fact will relate to another in a certain field. And there we have some of the most authoritative reporting on, for instance, the memo. He hasn't wasted a lot of time over that in his reporting, because there isn't anything to report yet, and there will be when it comes out, I guess, and that may well be today. What he concentrates on, like a good journalist, is what he's able to know, not what he's able to speculate about. And that means that there's a very clear guidepost that I, for one, will turn to whenever the sandstorm gets thick.
Yeah,
Marshall,
we only have a few minutes left here. And what I want to interject here is that I lived through the Watergate era and the terrific reporting, I think, the terrific reporting of the Washington Post. What the problem is today is you do still have the Washington Post doing terrific reporting, I do believe, and newspapers are picking up the slack and working, but networks, TV, radio, and on social media have taken stories and just dragged them down into the mud. That, you know, there's no longer a daily, like you used to open up the Washington Post, which I never read before, by the way, before Watergate, which, and you would look for the stories, and while you were there, you would find other things out. Now the media oversimplifies things. That's all I just wanted to say about it. You know, there's a big crisis coming that's going to come to the Senate and the House, and it's all been watered down by this crap that comes out on social media, but not only from individuals, but from mainstream media as well.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, it's a rush to the bottom, that's quite clear, and it contaminates the whole field. I mean, I quote these institutions as ones worthy of our respect still, and that is broadly true. However, you know, as I say, they're operating in a marketplace, and there's competition involved, and it's inevitable that the approach of the lowest common denominator can start to predominate. And even, you know, right when it comes down to some of the most salient choices that the editor of a particular outlet has to make every day is, what are we going to put as the lead story? Well, of course, it's inevitably going to be the one that, the strongest pressure on the decision makers, of course, is to make it what is going to get the highest number of eyeballs attracted to it. And that usually means what's current, what's trending, to use the language of the most digitally minded of those institutions. And there will inevitably be a chiming, a similarity, a degradation, really, to the lowest common denominator. That, as an impulse, will inform the range of possibilities, which doesn't seem very big at the end of the day, or at least the end of the morning, when you confront each new day's crop.
All right, well, Jill, you have one minute to wrap it up.
Okay, what I'm going to say in this 1 minute is, if anyone read the New York Post, probably, and wasn't on page 6, 17 months ago, you would have seen what you would have seen, quote, the memo, unquote.
All right.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's all there. You just have to cherry pick, like I believe the Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee have been cherry picking to get to this memo that's coming out today.
Well, David, once again, it's always great to have you on the Media Beat.
So keep beating. Thank you very much.
I keep beating. Okay, thanks very much. I'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
And, of course, you can hear David right here on Robinhood Radio. And you can also hear him, if you miss it, you can also hear him, by the way, on demand at robinhoodradio.com. Click on the Media Beat.